Welcome to Juno Afternoon. It's Friday, February 17th. I'm Andy Klein with you today, and thanks for joining us. On today's show, celebrating women of distinction in Juno, the AWARE annual event is coming up, and you can still attend. We'll be previewing tonight's fireside chat at the Mendenhall Visitor Center, which is all about beginning birding. And we'll hear about an upcoming yoga workshop with Rainforest Yoga. And Girls on the Run is coming up again, and if you've ever wanted to help, now's your chance because they need coaches. That program is also organized by AWARE, and we'll hear all about it. That's all coming ahead today on Juno Afternoon. I hope you'll join us.
Hands and grass, ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta kanakaya ha anikach, gunish cheese.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Akhwan. The Kliné Di have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. Right now. Everyone from A to Z. Chaka Khan sort of says it all right there, right? Every woman is a woman of distinction in their own way, but the Women of Distinction annual dinner is coming up, and it's something that honors really special members of our community. And to talk to us right now is the Deputy Director of AWARE, Sarah Lynn Tabachnik. Sarah Lynn, thanks so much for coming in.
Hey, it's a pleasure, Andy.
Yeah, great to have you here. This is what not to put you on the spot, but what year is this of the Women of Distinction?
26
years of Women of Distinction. Wow, that's really awesome.
Isn't that something?
Do you know how the idea came up? Is it something that has happened in other areas, or is it something that's totally a Juno idea? Or
you know, because I've been at AWARE for so long, I do know how the idea came up, which was the director at AWARE was Annette Coggins in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And she got invited to an event that was similar to this. And so she did some research from the folks who were sponsoring that event in another state. And they shared a lot of information and was like, she wanted to bring it to Juno, and she did.
It's become this really premier event, hasn't it, every year? It's really such a cool thing.
It's pretty special.
it's great. It's for a town like us, I think, you know, like, you know, at least one or two of the people, even if you don't know all of the people that are being honored, you definitely know or have been touched by the work of one or two, if not all, of the people every year.
Yeah, you maybe heard of them. And then what's so interesting, I think, and at least for me, then when I go to the event and I hear them speak or I read their biographies, I'm like, oh my God, I never knew that about them. I never knew that. It's kind of astounding.
So cool. I mean, you know, it just shows you the diversity of the people's backgrounds and also just like their long-term commitment to serving is something that I just think happens a time and again. But it's tell us a little bit about the criteria of how people are chosen. I know they're nominated, but what are the people that end up, you know, selecting the very few that get this honor? What are the different things they're sort of looking for?
Yeah, so I think the board of directors is looking for the kind of long-term dedication to supporting folks in the community, looking at integrity, looking at mentoring, just kind of how people move through the world and how they bring people along with them and support individuals as well as groups and the entire community, really.
Sometimes when you get into these community awards, it ends up being like, oh, well, that person amassed a fortune. Great. Good for them. Or that person is very powerful or owns a really well-known business. Like that can be sort of what happens at sometimes at like, you know, community. But this is such a different thing because it's really about People can be very humble backgrounds, but they've just served and served and served, sometimes without much recognition through much of their life.
So true.
And then they have, and then, you know, I think often it strikes me that when I've talked to people that have gotten this, they kind of, maybe they felt like they were just working anonymously and didn't really know people noticed.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right. And some of the women who've been honored have like overcome tremendous hardships, like really lots of challenges, and just kind of keep putting one foot in front of the other, in front of the other, which is a beautiful thing to honor as well.
Yeah. In a community like ours, you know, you can, you know, just affecting dozens of people can have such a ripple effect and such a big effect on a community like ours. Yeah. Very cool. Well, let's talk about a little bit about the dinner itself and about, I mean, everyone, I kind of feel like everyone who's listening has heard of this event, but often I think people feel like, well, I'm sure all the tickets are sold out, or I'm sure I can't go. I'm sure, you know, people have right, all that. So let's let people know that maybe they can go still.
Sure. Yeah. Everyone is welcome. So this event is going to be held on March 4th at Elizabeth Paratrovich Hall. Doors open at 5:30. The program and dinner begin at 6:30. And a large part of the program is hearing the women, each of the honorees, the four honorees, who maybe it's worthwhile to name them.
Oh, Susan Bell. I think we should. Yeah, I was going to definitely ask that.
Yeah. Maybe you've heard of them. Susan Bell, Jenny Brown, Larae Jones, and Kate Wolf.
Can you give a quick little glimpse of a bio of each one of those people?
I don't know if it could be quick.
I know, but right? Just to let people know, maybe they've heard the name and don't quite know.
Right. So maybe people know Susan Bell. She's a lifelong Alaskan from Nome, Inupiat. She worked with the McDowell Group and then was the commissioner for the Alaska Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. She went back to the McKinley Research Group, the new name of the McDowell Group. She's president there now. And her contributions in terms of volunteering to the community are vast.
Very cool. Okay.
Is one of our honorees.
There you go. There you go. Now there's a biography.
Right?
Right. a distinguished honoree. Okay, let's keep going down the line here.
Okay, then I'm going alphabetically.
Yes.
Jenny Brown. Jenny comes from a large Tlingit family, originally from Huna. And she graduated from the University of California, Sacramento in 1997, from Truce Recovery in 2017, and from the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium in 2022. And Jenny has overcome many obstacles, and now for the last 9 years has been working with women and children, supporting domestic violence and sexual assault victims, as well as people who are unemployed, homeless, incarcerated, people in recovery. She holds close her quote, "No one gets left behind" upbringing, mm-hmm. and works to find ways to support and heal Native women while keeping their culture alive.
That's someone who's definitely, whose mission in life is definitely very closely aligned with and probably near and dear to the hearts of the people that work at AWARE.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure she's very familiar. I'm sure the people at AWARE are very familiar with Jenny and her work. Yeah. That's cool.
Larae Jones is being honored. Larae calls herself a human rights advocate. She's a strong believer that we have to work to retain our rights and vote for like-minded political figures so that we are able to maintain our rights. She's a longtime Juno Pro-Choice Coalition member. She's a person who helped bring LunaFest. People are familiar mm-hmm. with that, the International Film Festival.
She's been in this very studio talking about LunaFest.
Right?
Yep.
Right, right. She works with the Alaska Women's Lobby, PFLAG, the Juneau Pride Chorus, League of Women Voters, and is also a great community volunteer.
One of those people that just puts her time and energy where her mouth is, in a way. You know what I mean? Like you know, not only says what she believes, but really works for the things that she believes.
Right, yeah. Right, right. So you get to see that. And then Kate Wolf is our fourth honoree, and Kate worked at REACH for a really long time, 32 years, and now she is the Prevention Program Manager at Family Promise. And she's another person who volunteers with the Special Olympics Sales Orca Program, Douglas Senior Lunch Program. She's an advisor for the Juneau Chapter of People First, a board member at SAIL, on and on.
The lists of the things that I don't know where people find the time, but they, you know, that's just what committed people do. You know, they just end up finding time to work on these projects that are important. Yeah.
I wonder that too. Time and stamina.
Stamina.
Yeah. It's impressive.
It's really impressive. Well, they are obviously, these four women are incredibly impressive people. So the gala, as you said, is happening Saturday, March 4th, 2023 here this year. And the tickets are sort of on e-sale, right? So how do people go find these tickets?
Right. So if you go to awareak.org, Women of Distinction is front and center there. You click on it. You can click on buying a ticket. You can click on making buying an ad. You can click on making a donation, any or all of that.
Is there like a silent auction and things like that associated with the dinner?
You know, there may be a few silent auction, but not like it used to be.
Okay. That's
COVID
kind of changed a little
things.
Bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It used to be dessert auctions and things like that, right?
Well,
yeah.
The dessert auction is still in the works.
That's maybe what I was wondering about. Okay. Yeah. That's maybe what I'm remembering. Was the dessert auction.
You're good.
Famous. Yes.
Right.
Now, how about like a table? Or can you buy tables and things?
You can buy tables.
Like if someone has a company or if they, you know, have a group of people they know all want to go, how do you go about doing that?
Right. Same way on the website, awareak.org, and you can buy a table. So this year there are 8 seats at a table, and a table costs $1,000. So you're making a little bit of an extra donation. Because a single ticket is $100, you're also ensuring that you get to sit together with your pals. And, you know, it's a fundraiser. We're going to have a great dinner, I might add.
Okay.
Catered by Smokehouse Catering.
Very cool. And let's talk about, it's a fundraiser for Aware.
Right.
So let's talk about Aware a little bit. What's going on with Aware right now? What are some of the things when you think about where the funds need to go right now? What are some of the things that you're kind of really working on right now?
You know, it's funny you say that because I was meeting with Mandy Cole, our executive director, and she was showing me how the amount of money that we spent on heating oil this year has like exponentially risen from prior year. Food also. So
inflationary pressures in general and prices is affecting nonprofits, and especially nonprofits that have to worry about housing people.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, of course, we're working with vulnerable people who have survived violence at the hands of someone who was supposed to love them and keep them safe. So that's the emergency shelter that we have. We have supportive housing. We're working on other housing for folks because sometimes people come to Aware for safety and then it's just so challenging to try to find housing.
I was going
to
ask about that. You mentioned a little bit about, you know, COVID affecting the fundraiser, but COVID affecting the way that Aware fulfilled its mission. You know, having a group home or community, you know, communal spaces and things like that was not as possible, obviously, under COVID. So I'm just guessing that you all must have kind of thought about innovative approaches and new ways of especially reaching that demand of housing, emergency shelter, things like that. Is that something that's still continuing?
Well, we really tried to reach out in different ways, and that is continuing. And then housing also, right, is still continuing.
And that's such a challenge in Juneau in general as well.
Yes. Yeah. But we have a project happening now on Cordova Street. So we're hoping to be able to, you know, sometime this year.
What's that project?
Open some more units. That's 7 units, single room occupancies.
Oh, that's great.
It'll be real nice.
Yeah. So you'll have this kind of new facility, new place for people to. And is that meant to be short term emergency type housing, or is it sort of you guys don't know yet?
I think it could be permanent housing.
I see.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So actual kind of apartments almost.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Great. Well, anything else you want folks to know about either the Women of Distinction dinner or what's happening at Aware? I'm sure there's lots. That's an open-ended question.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the Women of Distinction dinner specifically. Maybe just a recap of how people can get involved.
Well,
with that,
maybe this is such a fun event. It's really it's touching of the heart. It's good for the spirit, good for the mind. So really, everyone is welcome.
That's really true. When you, it is. I would reiterate that. Just an event where you're really celebrating four people who've dedicated a large part of their life just to doing good, and helping people and being good people.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an amazing thing, and it's really such a cool thing to celebrate, and it's uplifting. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a fun evening. More than anything else, it's a fun evening.
It's a fun evening.
Yeah, definitely. And so again, the tickets are $100, but if you want to get a table, it's $1,000 for a table.
Right. And if you're really I really want to go to this, but I don't have $100, give a call.
Okay. Great.
Yeah.
Well, that's really great.
Yeah.
Well, very, very cool. Sarah Lynn Tabachnik, who's the deputy director at Aware. Thanks so much.
It's a pleasure.
You're going to have a great – I know that we're going to talk further on another Juno Afternoon. We'll actually get all the people who are being honored, and we'll talk in depth about their accomplishments and what they've done and all that kind of stuff. So we'll be able to talk about it again before the event itself. But let's just wanted to let people know about making sure they get to the event and get the tickets, because it does sell out. So that's one thing to keep in mind. This is an event that definitely sells out. So you got to get on the ball there and get a ticket. And that's at aware.org is the place to go. Thanks, Sarah Lynn.
Pleasure, Andy.
All right, great talking to you. Okay. Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein with you. And joining me now, who's going to preview the fireside chat coming up at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center, is Lori Lamb. Lori, thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome. I'm happy to be here.
Good to have you here. And your focus for the fireside chat tonight is going to be birding for beginners, or beginning birding to grow it into a lifelong passion, that sort of thing. Is that
a little bit of both. So the primary target, of course, will be people who have not birded before or are just beginners. But also, if you've been a birder for a while, it might be nice to come and try and take a little different look at birding. Birding's one of those activities where once you get going, sometimes people just get hooked in, and next thing you know, you are on a lifelong adventure.
Well, that's me. I was just telling you, I have a friend who every time he sees a bird, he says, "Oh, well, look, a lesser yellow legs." And sometimes he's right. And that's, I feel like I'm that way. I'm always like, a waxwing. It might not, probably not a waxwing.
But sometimes. Yeah.
But I do. I kind of gotten to the point where I know the common ones. I love seeing a varied thrush. But I don't really know how to bird. Do you know what I mean? Like, I walk along and I see a bird and I am excited about it, but I don't know how to bird. So what are some tips on how to turn a walk into a birding excursion?
So you're already part of the way there. You notice birds. That's the first thing. Wherever you go, just kind of keep your eyes and your ears open. Sometimes birds are where you don't expect them. You might have even noticed walking through the heart of downtown. Sometimes there's rock doves on the ground or starlings, which are kind of small, dark, speckled birds with yellow beaks up on the power lines.
Those European starlings?
European starlings,
now I have
exactly.
I don't like them.
And you'll hear a lot of people say that.
I don't like them, but I've heard that actually they've been around for quite a while now. And so we've got to accept that the starlings are here.
They're around, whether or not you like them, there's still birds that you can notice. And I'm a firm believer in looking at the common birds first, the ones that you think are the easiest to see, and starting to really pay attention to the details. Like, think about a bald eagle. Probably just about anybody in the States could recognize what a bald eagle is, at least an adult bald eagle. But when's the last time you really looked?
And they are magnificent. I mean, they're amazing. I got really interested in talking to birders because, for instance, there was a chestnut-backed chickadee that visits my bird feeder all the time. I told a person that locally and they were like, "Oh, well, there's people who travel thousands of miles to Juneau to see that bird." And I'm like, that bird's in my yard all the time. What's the big deal? And that's another fascinating part about it. really understanding that the birds that we feel are common are actually pretty exceptional often.
Yeah, they're unusual for people who live in different habitats, so to speak. If you were someone living in the middle of the desert, chestnut-backed chickadee's probably not going to be the bird you'd see. I grew up in Minnesota where we had chickadees too, but they had black-capped chickadees, which look different than ours. And I have to say, I'm a little bit biased to the chestnut-backed chickadees. I think they're awfully cute.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they are. They're really cool. I like them. Even like as you're saying, the starlings, boy, I'm not great, but they're beautiful. It's hard to deny the iridescent, amazing color that they are is incredible. I love seeing a varied thrush. I love seeing those. That's varied thrush is sort of my favorite in a way. It's like a robin with racing stripes.
They're they're a bird that some people do travel distances to see that are challenging, but we hear them maybe more than see them all the time in the summer months out here.
It's such a sign of spring, isn't it, to hear that first varied thrush? It's so fun.
It is. Yeah. And the varied thrush is actually a good example to think about with a robin. If you're thinking about beginning birding, robins and varied thrushes are both thrushes. So one of the things you can do as someone who's familiar with both is start to think about how are those two birds similar? So if you look at the way their bodies are shaped, the relative size and shape of their beak, you can start to get an indication that these two birds might be related. And once you have that in mind, you can look for other birds that might also be thrushes. And if you're wanting to figure out, so what bird might this really be? What thrush might it be? You can actually go to your bird book, to an app, and use that as a starting point where you can look up the robin or the thrush and say, I think it's something really similar, so I'm going to start looking there.
That's really a cool point because, the other thing that I think that's really interesting when you were talking about that I was thinking about, I was like, well, you know, I have like a little yard and robins come through it. And then I got some binoculars. And it is just another world to look through binoculars at even what we would consider common birds and what they are doing for 20 minutes. It is wild. Like, you know, the way they torture those earthworms is incredible.
And it's just the way they move. And what I love about binoculars is, you know, people are like, oh, that's a bird. I can see it. But you put those binoculars up to your eyes and you're noticing colors you might not have noticed. You're noticing patterns in the feathers you didn't see. And like you said, it just gives you that much closer of a view of whatever the bird might be doing, whether it's preening or looking for food or getting into mischief.
Yeah, exactly. I saw there's one bird. I'm going to forget the name of it, but there's all these chickadees and they moved through my yard. And then there was this other bird that was hanging out with the chickadees, but he was like going perpendicular and moving around. Nuthatch? It was a nuthatch.
What did it look like?
I think it was a nuthatch is what I remember. So I remember looking through the binoculars and going, that is a different bird. He's pretending to be a chickadee.
And that actually
that was really fascinating.
Yeah. And that actually brings a good point is another good reason to look at those really familiar birds and start paying attention to the details is you'll notice that much quicker when something unusual shows up.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have some tips for, like I'm sort of expressing the way I've fallen into how I observe birds, but what are some tips that you might have for beginners about how they kind of start observing or hearing or what are some of the things that you would tell a beginner?
So I think one of the first things, like I mentioned, is just start noticing them. Don't worry about what the bird is just yet, but start looking at it. Notice things like what size and shape relatively is its beak. That can be a good starting point once you get your hands on a bird book or an app to start figuring out what you're seeing and to learn a little bit about the bird. If you're looking at a bird with a really kind of conical beak, it probably eats seeds. So that might tell you a little bit about its habitat. If you're looking at a bird like a great blue heron, for example, with that long, almost sword-like beak, it's probably not a seed eater, right? You could probably guess that when you take a look at it. It's after the fish. So I would say go to the areas where birds are likely to be common. So around Juneau, I find that the shoreline can be a really great spot to go, especially in the winter. Anywhere there's open water tends to draw birds in. And my way I started that I tend to recommend is start with ducks.
Oh, that's a cool way of looking. Because everyone can spot a duck, right?
That was my theory in college when I took a wildlife ID class. I hadn't really paid attention to birds. And I'm like, ducks. I can see a duck. At that point in time, I had no idea how people identified small birds because you could hardly see them.
But to your point, I was out at Point Luisa a couple weekends ago, and an acquaintance that I just sort of knew happened to be out there with a spotting scope. And we were looking at this group of birds. And of course, every time I see a group of birds in water, I go, oh, scoters, you know, I don't know.
You'll write some
right, something sometimes, right? Bufflehead, scoters. And he said, oh, those are harlequins. And when you see a harlequin duck through a spotting scope or through a binocular, boy, that is a special experience, right? And they are gorgeous. And that's one of the cool things about ducks is that they can be so spectacular.
They're very handsome birds, the harlequins in particular. A lot of times with the male ducks, they're more flashy than the females. So if you see some ducks and you see a bright, sharply colored harlequin, for example, and something maybe a little more drab next to it, pay attention. And then when you get a chance to look at your app or your bird book, you might see that you've been looking at both the male and the female. That actually makes me think of another good tip. When you're looking at a bird and you're trying to figure out what it is, keep your eye on the bird. Birds oftentimes don't stick around for long periods of time before they dive if they're a duck or they fly away if they're a chickadee. Remember as many details as you can about that bird.
Oh, before looking to a book or looking down or writing something.
Yes.
Just keep your eyes on the bird and observe as much as you can while it's there because they can be fleeting.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
And I often will if it's a bird that's new to me that I'm not quite sure what it is, I'll observe the shape of the beak, the colors, the markings, and I'll repeat them out loud to myself.
Oh.
That's how I can help remember what it is
that
I'm seeing.
You know, red breast or something. You just sort of say those things. Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, that's cool. Especially if you have a friend with you or something and then you can, compare notes that way. Are you someone who has a life list?
I would say I have many lists, but not one consolidated list.
Okay. All right. Sometimes I think that's almost this, I've know longtime birders and it's almost like, it almost takes the joy out of it or something. Like they just mark it on the book. Okay. I've seen it. You know, I've seen that happen a few times. Anyway, I would just say for those of birders, we can keep the joy.
Keep the joy in it. Yes. And some people, I think that does happen too, but I don't know. There is a joy in seeing something you've never seen before. So if you allow yourself the time to really look at it and not just move on to the next bird, I know for me, a lot of what birding is about is that joy of discovery. I can bird around Juneau, and depending on where I'm going, I have a good idea about what I might see, but I don't know for sure I'm going to see it.
And you always get, and you can always be surprised. Is there something in Juneau that you still haven't observed that you're kind of looking for, or something that maybe you've only rarely seen that you would love to see again?
I don't see ptarmigan very often. I'm not usually in the right habitat, and I've only seen a gray-crowned rosy finch once in Juneau.
Gray-crowned rosy finch. Okay, that's the one. I'm going to start looking for that one. All right.
Better luck when you're up high.
Well, Lori Lamb, thanks so much. Let's just get people knowing about what's happening tonight. Again, it's the Fireside Chat. It's at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. It's at 7 o'clock. And we've only just barely touched on the surface of what you can talk about tonight. Anything else you want folks to know about what you're going to be discussing tonight?
So I'll talk a little bit about some of the ways to identify birds tonight. I'm actually going to bring out some of my collection of different bird books. So if people are curious about what sort of resources might be out there, I'll talk a little bit about apps and some of the other tools that might help also.
Great. Well, Lori Lamb, thanks so much for coming in. It's the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center Fireside Chat. It's happening tonight, 7 o'clock, out at Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. It always gets a big crowd, so go out early and you'll hear all about the joy of beginning to become a lifetime birder. Thanks, Lori.
Thank you.
Great talking to you. And coming up next, let's listen to a little bit of Sounds Wild.
Sounds Wild. Hi, I'm Riley Woodford for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. A fishing boat is hauling its net in the relatively calm inside waters of Southeast Alaska. Fishing is a notoriously dangerous industry, and there are typically about a half dozen fatalities each year in the commercial fishing industry in Alaska. But fishing is getting safer. That number was 5 times higher 40 years ago. In October of 2022, the U.S. Coast Guard reported that no one had died commercial fishing in Alaska over the past year. This has only happened once before. in 2015. People die commercial fishing because they fall overboard, their boat sinks, or they are killed in on-deck accidents with machinery. A number of things are making fishing safer. Immersion suits and life rafts are required equipment. Safety drills and first aid training are required for crew members. Life jackets are better. They're more comfortable and easier to wear while working, so more people are wearing them. EPIRBs, emergency position indicating radio beacons, are required for fishing vessels more than 3 miles offshore. These automatic signals guide rescuers in the event of an emergency. And the growing use of emergency stop devices on deck machinery is helping to reduce on-deck injuries and accidents. Sounds wild. I'm Riley Woodford.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein with you. And coming up next, we're going to be talking to folks from Rainforest Yoga about a workshop that's going to be happening. And with me right now is Mary Capobianco. Sorry, Mary, I knew I was going to mess up your name. It's Capobianco, I think.
That's right.
Okay,
yes,
Capobianco.
Exactly.
Sorry about that. And then Kimberly, okay. Kimberly Grief is also with us. And Kimberly's going to be the person conducting the workshop, I believe. Is that right, Mary?
That's exactly right.
Well, Mary, let's just start with you. Let's just talk a little bit about Rainforest Yoga and just the idea of bringing in a workshop like this.
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to say I'm on one of the board members of Rainforest Yoga, and I want to thank the community and our members for their support during this time. It's been really tough through the pandemic for not just Rainforest, but all of the nonprofits. And so the community has really been helpful. Our members have been wonderful and patient and understanding, and we've had a lot of community support. I want to give a shout out to the Juno Meditation Center. They've been really very kind to us. And so we're a nonprofit yoga studio. We have classes during the week. We bring in experts periodically throughout the year. The one that is that we're excited about coming in, because it's one of the it's the second one I think that we've done that is a bigger workshop with in live in the studio, and that's Kimberly Grief. And many people in the community might know her because she's come down before, but it's been a couple of years at least through the pandemic. And so we're quite thrilled to have her.
Well, that's good. Well, Kim, tell us a little bit about what your approach that you're going to bring for this workshop. I know that the title of it is Evolve Yoga. What do you mean by that term?
I think of Evolve as a living, evolving tradition. And so the more that we know and the more that we understand, we kind of change and adapt and grow. And I think of yoga as a living tradition.
So right. Tell me some of the ways that you, that then manifests how you approach your teaching.
Yeah, I think of teaching yoga in a sustainable way. So not something flashy that you go in and you do for a year or two. I look at a practice that's going to serve you for the longevity of your life. So as you age, you can continue doing the things that you enjoy. I also teach an embodied way. So I bring in a lot of a somatic approach of presence and understanding what sensations mean and just really being aware in your body and then integrating that into your everyday life so that your yoga practice is not something that you just do for an hour or two, but it's something that you can integrate throughout your day.
When you're practicing yoga, are you concentrating? Are there like areas you're concentrating on? Like, let's say strength, flexibility, spiritual, like, is that how you think of it? Or is it more integrated? Or how do you approach it?
It's all woven together. I think of it as integrated, so that yes, you're working on the mobility, which is a balance between strength and flexibility, weaving in that presence, which can be the spirituality.
Are there certain things that if there's someone who first of all, let me ask this, this workshop you're teaching, is it something that you feel is intermediate? Is it beginner? Is it advanced? Is it all? Tell me about how people might approach it.
It is all levels. One of my favorite things about teaching in this way is that somebody can show up in blue jeans and get something out of it. Someone who's unable to sit on the
floor.
Not
advised, maybe. I would say the blue jeans, let's get more comfortable in leggings or at least sweatpants, something.
Practice in what you've got. And yeah, you might have a little bit of restriction from your blue jeans, but we can work around that.
but as you're saying, someone who's really never even had an idea of what yoga or what your practice of yoga might be, can approach it and can attend.
I am all about getting people in their bodies and not trying to get them into poses.
Tell me, what do you mean by that? In their bodies?
Yeah, well, if we think about going to a yoga class, a lot of times it's about a posture that the teacher's leading you through. And I've moved away from that and really just like figuring out how you can make the posture accessible for your unique structure. And it might look different from the person to the right of you and to the left of you, but it's still an embodied practice for that individual.
That's really fascinating that you say that, because the little bit of yoga that I've done, often it's, I think that often it's taught to be, to look a very specific way because of the potential risk of injury if something's done incorrectly, right? So how do you adjust for that consideration and then still allow for these movements to be done differently?
In my observation and my experience of teaching and practicing, I think we've almost confused aesthetics with alignments. And so alignment looks, you know, pretty, or it looks a specific way, and we can kind of fit someone in a posture. But if we really pull back and look at the biomechanics and we look at somebody's structure, it's not going to look the same. And so, you know, again, the person to the right of you or the person to the left of you, their down dog position might look fairly different, but it's still the same posture.
Oh, that's really fascinating.
Yeah. It's exciting to me. I think it's empowering to teach people about their bodies, and it can really be an eye-opening experience when you discover, oh, I need to take my hands wider in downward facing dog in order to accommodate my specific shoulders.
So when you are teaching, and this is almost an impossible question because it's just the essence of like, how do you become an advanced teacher? But when you're teaching and you're seeing people, what is it that you see, or what is it that you're looking for in how someone does a posture to make sure that it's correct, given that people have different body types and will do it in different ways?
Absolutely. From the moment that someone walks through the studio door, I'm observing their body, how they move, how they breathe. And that gives me insight into how their posture is going to look. And so I might not give someone a traditional correction because it makes sense for their specific anatomical structure.
Wow, that's really fascinating. Well, I mean, obviously, it's a lifelong practice. It's depths and depths and depths of learning and teaching throughout your life to become an advanced yoga teacher like yourself. But you also have a background in massage therapy. And how does the different disciplines that you've learned through the years apply towards this discipline of being a yoga instructor?
Oh, they go hand in hand. And what I found with the massage therapy background is it really lends itself well to implementing some of the myofascial tools that I use in class.
What's that one? Yeah, I didn't even know how to pronounce that. Myofascial. Okay. What was that?
Well, I did it for you.
Yes, thank you.
We use therapy balls and the yoga mat to help wake up and connect to the tissues in the body. We have these little things called proprioceptors in our muscles, our fascia, our tissue. And it's like little GPS units in the body that help the brain figure out where you are in space. Isn't that cool?
Yeah. So that's like nervous system connectedness. Absolutely. And all that. Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely. So when we use a therapy ball to help kind of roll out and connect to an area, that student's brain lights up in that area. And so they have a little bit more connection to that than when we go and do a yoga pose, they can really feel and sense what they're working on.
Wow. Well, it's all so fascinating. Again, it's the workshop that's happening on February 24th, 25th, and 26th. It's in the Rainforest Studio that's there on Shattuck Way, the Goldtown Theater building. And the workshop title, I'll give the whole title, it's Evolve Yoga, Where Tradition Meets Modern Movement Science. And it's with Kimberly Grief, who we've been talking to. Kimberly, thanks so much for joining us. Really fascinating to talk to you about this. And Mary, anything else that folks need to know about being able to sign up for this or how they can become involved?
Well, they can sign up. The classes are filling up rather fast. And we did have an early bird special, which ends tonight at midnight. Aha! Speaking of birds.
Yes, it fits perfectly with our bird discussion we were having.
It sure does. But they can either, if they have the MindBody app, they can go on and use the MindBody app. Or they can go to rainforestyoga.org and go up to workshops and sign up for that.
Well, that's great. Well, Mary, thank you so much for letting us know about this. And Kimberly Grief, yoga instructor, thank you so much for joining us and explaining to us a little bit about what you are able to accomplish in these workshops.
Wonderful. Thanks for having me.
Great
on.
To talk
thank
to
you.
You
so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This is Steve Kosas with the Marie Drake Planetarium, and this is Star Party. That's going to call these radio spots. It's when a group of people come together to contemplate the night sky. In me, it induces a feeling of awe, which is a combination of reverence and fear. Reverence for the immensity of the universe and the humbling of the individual's personal life. Fear from the indifference of the universe to us in a possibly being meaningless, just laws of nature that inevitably lead to the heat death of the universe, which is the trend to disorder called entropy. But the universe is connected. All the atoms within us were forged in the cores of stars, except hydrogen and helium created at the Big Bang, then dispersed with stellar explosions when the star reaches the end of its lifespan. I've been fortunate in having had star parties in open ocean, in the middle of the Pacific, thousands of miles from the nearest land, and star parties in the Himalaya at 19,000 feet, distant miles from the nearest city. Carl Sagan and Neil deGrasse Tyson both say that the universe created us so that it could contemplate itself. We may be the only self-aware technological entities in the universe. If so, we have responsibility to maintain our environment, to continue our contemplation of our universe. The mathematical structures that humans have created model the large-scale properties of the universe, the macro world, and the atomic structures, quantum mechanics, of the micro world with incredible precision, so accurate that some theorists assert that it is a mathematical universe. However, we only understand 4% of everything. The rest is dark matter, which brings galaxies together, and dark energy, which is accelerating the expansion of the universe. If we run the clock backwards, 14 billion years to the past, all the matter and energy in the universe are a single point, the singularity of the Big Bang. All is connected. We are all stardust. This is Steve Kosas with the Marie Drake Planetarium. We're doing public shows again. Our schedule is on our website at mariedrakeplanetarium.org. Thank you.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein with you. And Girls on the Run has been going on for a number of years here in Juno. It's something that's empowering for young girls to learn to run, fun run, but it's also expanding and getting to older girls as well. And to talk about that, Brianna Stewart's here with us. She's with the Wear. And Brianna, You have a long title. Tell me your title that you have there at AWARE.
I am the Violence Prevention Youth and Education Coordinator here. And that means that, yeah, I help coordinate Girls on the Run locally in Juneau.
Yeah, tell me about it. It's a national program, right? I mean, Girls on the Run kind of happens all over the place, right?
It is. Yeah. It started in North Carolina, actually, but we first brought it to Alaska in 2008. So this is actually our 15th anniversary year, which is really exciting.
And am I right that it started with kind of younger kids and has kind of expanded out, and even there's a program that's now, it's called Heart and Soul. It's sort of like the expansion of Girls on the Run. Or maybe I have that wrong.
No, that's right. Okay. So Girls on the Run is for girls third through fifth grade. And then Heart and Soul is the middle school program. And that's for sixth through eighth grade girls. We operate both here in Juneau, and we're hoping to have both this spring.
Yeah, very cool. So, and we've had this discussion through a couple of different times through the years. This time of year is the year where you're looking for people to get involved and make sure that this thing goes off again this year like it always has, right?
Yes,
so
exactly.
Tell me about that. Becoming a coach or becoming involved. What sort of things are you hoping for people to do?
Well, we have a bunch of schools interested this spring, which is amazing because we're trying to rebuild after COVID, kind of changed the way after school programming looked for a little bit. So we have a lot of schools that are interested and want it operating at their school this spring. But in order to do that, we need more coaches. So we're looking for anyone who wants to be a positive role model for youth. All genders are welcome. You don't have to be a runner. You really just have to have that passion for empowering kids and being a positive role model.
That's what I was going to say. I'm sure the first thing that people think is, well, I'm not a runner. I might run a little bit, but I didn't run. I've never been coached. I don't know. You know, there's that stuff, right? So, but what you're really looking for is people just to kind of be there and guide kids.
Exactly. Because running is a part of the program, but a bigger part of it is the life skills that the girls learn and the relationships that they make with each other and with these trusted adults that are coaches. And we also serve girls that from all levels and backgrounds, too. Some of those girls might not be runners. So it's really a good thing to have a wide range of role models for them. And the program does build up to the 5K. So coaches can train alongside their team.
Holy, that's a good incentive. Yeah. You just gotta go along with it. Well, tell me how does that program look? It's not just a 5K that happens, right? It's a program. It's a kind of bringing kids and maybe even coaches along to the point where they can get to the 5K.
Right. So we do lessons that are, it's 20 lessons for 10 weeks, and they're after school. So the season starts on March 6th, and it will go all the way until May 17th, twice a week after school. And then our 5K celebratory fun run is going to be on May 20th.
So it starts the training for coaches, though, happens next weekend, right? Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
So we are hoping to have people interested that want to sign up as soon as possible. We have our coach training next Saturday, February 25th. And that's just a good day for us all to get together and build those relationships as a coaching team, because that's another great thing about being a coach for Girls on the Run. You don't have to do it alone. You have a team that does it with you. So they get to meet each other and start forming those relationships and just learn more about the curriculum, practice delivering a lesson. It's really a fun day of learning.
What does the curriculum kind of typically look like? What are those lessons? What are some examples of what those lessons look like?
So it's all different kinds of life skills that girls and people need to learn to live happy, healthy lives. There's lessons about inner beauty and resisting peer pressure. There's lessons about forming friendships, conflict resolution, standing up for themselves and others, community work. So it's really like wide encompassing.
Yeah, that's great. Just life skills in general. Yeah, that's really awesome. And it's like you say, it's been happening in Juneau for 15 years now.
Yep.
Incredible, really. So there's probably 24-year-old, 23-year-old young women who were part of the first class of Girls on the Run.
And we'd love to have them come as coaches.
That would be great, wouldn't it? It would be so great to hear from some of those young women who, you know, benefited from this program. And boy, they'd be amazing coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Is there a kind of a journey that you see happen with the girls that are part of this program? Maybe it's their first year that they kind of go through. Is there a sort of kind of landmarks that you see happen with girls as they enter this program?
Definitely. And every girl's journey looks a little bit different. And, you know, the areas that they grow in or what they get out of the program might be a little bit different. But statistics show, you know, like you mentioned, this is a national program. So they do a lot of research, and statistics show that 95% of families describe their girl as confident after they complete Girls on the Run or go through a season. We just ran our fall teams, and some quotes that we got from those girls were that they were inspired because their coaches taught them how to do community work. They were inspired that they learned how to stick up for themselves. Everyone, like, unanimously agreed that Girls on the Run was fun and they made new friends.
Oh, great. Wow. So it's just beloved, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very cool. And I'm sure a lot of girls are come back year after year and really enjoy it and maybe graduate up to the next level for a middle school program as well.
Yep. We've had some girls that definitely do more than just one season, and some girls that start in third grade and go all the way through it.
That's really cool. Well, once more, let people know how, if they're interested, if this has gotten them a little bit interested in maybe becoming a coach, how can they get in touch and how can they start that journey?
So we have a website. It's GOTR, greateralaska.org. And families can sign up their girls, families can sign up for a team on that website, and people that are interested in coaching can also sign up on that website. So again, that's GOTR, greateralaska.org. And we'd love to have people sign up and come to our coach training next weekend.
Well, that's awesome. The coach training is happening Saturday, February 25th. It's for Girls on the Run, and Brianna Stewart from AWARE has been telling us all about it. The actual Girls on the Run programs runs March 6th through the May 17th, and then the fun run itself is on May 20th. Brianna, thanks so much for coming in and letting us know about it.
Thank you so much.
Okay, have a great time with Girls on the Run this year. It's going to be great.
Girls on the Run is so much fun.
Well, that'll do it for Juneau Afternoon, broadcast live from Tlingit An'i on KTOO 104.3 FM, online at kto.org, and rebroadcast on this station at 7 p.m. To listen to interviews, see links to anything we discussed, or to be on the show yourself, you can check out our website at kto.org/JunoAfternoon, which is a production of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. Boston Christopher is our producer. We had help today from Aaron Tripp and Shelley Delaney. Our theme music's from Indian Agent. And I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. Thanks so much for joining us.